Hello and welcome to another segment of Buffalo Who Knew podcast series, which highlights the often underappreciated, sometimes unearthed aspects of the great city of Buffalo. And I'm really excited to be here today with a friend and incredible mover and shaker in this town, Dennis Marr. Welcome, Dennis, and also by Newell, of course.
Thanks for having me.
So Dennis is, among a number of things, an architect, a professor in architecture at the University of Buffalo, but here today because we're going to talk about a really exciting project that Dennis has launched and is the director and founder of, which is Assembly House 150 and the Fargo House. So, Dennis, let's get into it. It's an amazing project that I've had the pleasure of watching evolve over the years. Tell us a little bit about, you know, just a high level. What is the Assembly House 150 and the Fargo House?
Well, thanks for the invitation to speak with you guys. I'm an artist, first and foremost, and my work crosses into architecture, into forms of community engagement and the construction of meaningful environments, mostly through engaging with existing things, existing objects, existing spaces, existing buildings. And I came to Buffalo just over 20 years ago at a time when the landscape of the city, as you know, was quite different. It was a landscape of many, many houses slated for demolition. And I actually got a start here working on demolition sites. As a laborer, when many buildings in the city were being razed, and this basically highlighted for me the value of the building stock, but also the movements of matter through the world, the movements of materials, of objects, of people, of memories, all these things that make a city. And through the Fargo House project, the Assembly House project, I've tried to coalesce those things. Fargo House is a former. Well, it's a Victorian-era structure from the 1890s. It's actually two structures on the lot.
Which was slated for demolition.
Slated for demolition over 15 years ago. Exactly. On the west side on Fargo Avenue. And I've approached that house as an architectural experiment, transforming the interior through the continuous collection and reassembly of found things, and cutting through the layers of the house to open up new forms of spaces, and hosting events and various types of gatherings inside while I do that. And then there's a cottage in the back that I'm transforming in a related but very different way. In any case, I see this site as a kind of an epicenter for a house imaginary. And by that, I mean, it's a place where I'm thinking about creating a dream world where living is at the core. The Assembly House is very...
Well, and before we jump to the Assembly House, sure. I mean, I think it's absolutely worth mentioning. You just had a major feature in the New York Times Magazine and T Magazine about Fargo House. And for those who haven't had the experience of seeing it, it is nothing short of mind-bending in terms of the layers and intricacies of the objects that you've assembled in the house. So talk a little bit about that process. Like how did the objects that are in the house get in the house and positioned where they are and layered how they are?
So I love architecture, buildings, and architecture is in many ways the theme throughout the house, because I'm collecting a lot of secondhand objects that are building fragments, as well as architectural miniatures, mini dollhouses, things that evoke, recall places I've been to, real and imagined places. So the things, though, that I find and brought in, they're not stuff that most people would consider of high economic value. There are things that are oftentimes left over, found at an estate sale or flea market, a salvage yard, acquired for very little money. And I'd like to put them together in such a way to create special environments that have different themes. There's a bridge room, there's a globe room, there's a wardrobe room, and the various rooms acquire their names, not just through the program, the use of the space, but also the type of objects that are collected there. And I think you pointed out it's important too that it's evolving, that I work on it, I respond to objects, because I think for me I think that there's so much embodied energy in objects. And you know, I'm in this amazing space talking with you guys. I know that Newell feels this way, that there's this energy of things. And for me, I think the house attempts to coalesce that energy and to find the pulsations of the matter. You know, it's like the a nod to animism, to quality, the life within things, and understanding that so many times that our psyches are projected onto the things that we're connected to, and they give back, and you know, playing with that dialogue.
Dennis, do you come from a family where this was like something that you learn through other family members, or did you have other family members that were kind of into the same sort of thing? Or did you literally just come across it on your own?
My mother's a muralist. So there's a strain. We've actually worked together on some projects, and what she does in ordinary suburban houses throughout Baltimore, Maryland, is make paintings of other spaces. So other people commission her to make some other kind of place. And I think there's a connection there. But my interest for a very long time has been finding ways to connect architecture, forms of environmental art with cities and, I guess, community engaged practices, in ways that resonate with publics. So I guess it comes out of that long-standing interest to find ways of relating these things and making them meaningful.
Well, and it sounds like Assembly 150 is the perfect embodiment of that. So maybe that's a perfect way to segue. So you took note of a church that was for sale, maybe at risk of demolition, just outside of downtown Buffalo, practically in downtown Buffalo. Talk to us about that site and the project that is embodied there.
So at a time when the Fargo House was first starting to get some notoriety, I was being approached by a lot of people coming from other cities who wanted to go on a tour, educators wanted to take students, curiosity seekers. And I started working with tradespeople in the home renovation industry, you know, back when I did a show at the AKG. And that was the idea there, was to connect with people working in the field of renovation in the city and to work artistically with those people. And as the house began to get more attention, I thought, well, there's an opportunity to scale this up somehow. So I started looking for other sites that would allow that to happen. And I actually looked at many buildings over several years. And it just so happened that the former Immaculate Conception Church was available. You know, it was in severe disrepair. It's on the corner of Edward and Elmwood. In a curiously centered part of the city. It's odd that a building of such prominence would be so empty for so long there. But it was a fortunate thing, I suppose, that it was available and that we could put together people to acquire it. And you know, it's from the beginning was quite an effort, because it had no services, no water, no heat, no electric, two gaping holes in the roof. But the idea was basically to take some of those primary seeds that I've been working on at the Fargo House and kind of blow them up, and to use building trades and restoration and tradespeople plus art kind of together in a kind of hybrid. And so we've been working to turn this into a special site that's centered around what I think of as a living museum for the construction arts. So it's a place that's continuing to evolve every day with people who work on it and learn from it, people who are learning skills of building, people who are studying art and design and architecture, making contributions to the structure, weaving into our various programs that we run. There's restoration efforts that's happening on the church. Thankfully, we're doing the roof now, which is amazing. It only took 10 years. but it's like the Fargo House. Think of it as a site for the public imagination and one that's putting us back in touch with things. You know, things are disappearing. You know, our relationship to things. You know, we spend so much of our time now in the virtual screen world, and only, that's only getting more. Things that are close to us and to our bodies are becoming ever more distant every day. And I'm interested in restoration of a tactile connection to things in the world, because I think we learn so much that it, and it affects our consciousness in ways that we're not even aware of. And I really want to preserve and protect and to amplify opportunities for us to engage with the physical world, materials, tools, people.
For those who don't live in Buffalo, this is worth coming to Buffalo just to see Assembly House 150. It's truly mind-blowing. The scale of the building, the amount of activity that's going on. And I just took another tour yesterday with Newell, and I had seen it before, but even the difference between what I had seen last year or a couple of years ago versus now is just extraordinary. You really are firing on so many cylinders in the space. There are art spaces. There are, classrooms where University of Buffalo architecture students are coming in and building models. There are programs where high school or grade school, maybe not grade school, high school students are coming in from Buffalo schools to study building practices. So talk us through your various programs that are happening in the space.
So I think that the origin had to do with creating a special dream world for architecture has necessitated very practical forms of engagement. And they have to do with making things, which how things are built, understanding how things are made and the realities of construction, the realities of the very beautiful buildings in the city and their histories, the Victorian era housing stock and all its component parts, which are so inspiring to me. So we run skill building programs in the church. We have an 8-week construction skills training program that's called SACRA, that's S-A-C-R-A. It's an acronym for the Society for the Advancement of Construction-Related Arts. This teaches basic skills of construction to aspiring learners with a goal to job placement in industries outside in the city. And we have the Model City Builders High School program, which we're now running with the University of Buffalo School of Architecture and Planning, which is for high school kids to get engaged with building things in the summertime, is that high school kids have so few opportunities to touch tools and work materials. We have an apprenticeship initiative, which takes graduates out of our 8-week program and pays them to upskill in 6-month increments where they're working on special projects with artisans in our orbit on the building, in the building. And then there's UB architecture students who come through many of the classes that I teach at the university to work on design and build projects of various kinds where they're oftentimes reimagining architectural fragments. They're studying, for example, we just did a class where we're looking at plaster, historic architectural casting through plaster, working with Casey Bowles and his amazing team at Buffalo Architectural Casting, doing workshops in plaster casting and reimagining plaster pieces to introduce new design ideas and then building out a display for those things. So all of these things kind of combine together, the workshop areas, the tool areas, the various libraries, the classroom. It's not really a traditional classroom, but it's all a space for learning and feeds into the overarching environment, which is itself a marvelous interior. It's got historic plasterwork. It's got antique woodwork. It's got beautiful inlay floors, the Gothic windows with the stained glass from the 1890s, the Munich Studio Zettler and Company. So the whole space and the soaring arches, the Gothic arches, the whole space kind of feeds into this idea of the marvelous architectural interior that is being both celebrated and also reimagined through the various activities that take place inside.
Well, and it sounds like another exciting outgrowth of all of this activity is that you're taking your model, you're taking this concept, your practice, I guess, and the training therein, and you're bringing it to other spaces. You're doing public art commissions in, you just did one of the Birchfield Penny, and let's talk about that project at the Northland, which is a former industrial site, which has been repurposed into vocational training on the east side of Buffalo. So let's talk about your public art engagements.
So my work as an artist is really centered around the idea of creating architectural dream worlds from found, augmented, and newly built pieces of things. And the projects we've been able to do with assistance from various builders and learners at Assembly House have thankfully been able to extend out into the city to transform different spaces. So we did a three-dimensional wall mural at the Northland Workforce Training Center, which was a 40 foot by 22 foot tall wooden wall mural built with many specially crafted elements, wooden joinery components, models, wood frames, various details, architectural details, and then mixed with some pattern molds that were actually found in the site where the project was installed. It's the former Niagara Machine and Tool Works building on the east side. And, I love the idea of taking these relics of the past from the industrial era and combining them with newly produced pieces of another generation of aspiring tradespeople and bringing those things together to make a kind of map, an imaginary map of the city. And the Birchfield Penny Project, extraordinary opportunity to take about 2,000 square feet of space, which is totally boring, uninteresting classroom space, and basically reinvigorate it by treating it as a living art installation and also art education space that's functional for the museum. So we basically created two rooms. One is a kind of a garden grotto theme, and another is an inverted living room where there's lots of kind of recognizable pieces of, one might say, living room furniture that have been reimagined. And the two spaces are connected together by this table, the specially crafted table that winds throughout both rooms. There's kind of homage to Birchfield in it as well, because we've taken some of his wallpaper designs from the 20s and abstracted them onto the walls. And we ran lessons in things like historic painting with artists, tradespeople with skills to communicate those to apprentices who are working on the project. So all told, there's probably 50 people involved in the build out. We did furniture restoration workshops, cabinet making workshops, the historic painting stuff, stained glass workshops. So I love that there's the project itself, which I think the project as a space, as an environment, is a very exciting one. But it gets even more exciting to me thinking about all the dimensions of people who were involved in the making and the transference of skills that are involved in the totality of that effort.
And are you finding that a lot of these people who are being mentored or are learning on these projects, does this become their vocation? Is this something that they're launching into post these projects?
In most cases, it does. Yeah. I mean, that's we probably, amongst the high school kids and the adult learners and the apprentices and so on, I had close to 200 people over the last 8 years come through the programs. We have very many stories of success. People have gone into now high-ranking positions in various outfits. There's a woman who's at Hadley Exhibits, project manager there. One very involved at the tool library, many people involved in the construction trades in different capacities. I'm very interested in preservation-related trades and trying to grow relationships with specialty forms of craft and production. We're very thankful that we've been able to build relationships with industries and also to continue to recruit cohorts of individuals who are inspired to learn and to grow into those fields.
Well, and for those who are in the know, you also did one of your fabulous art installations, public art installations at the Mattress Factory, which for those who haven't been, is in Pittsburgh. And it has to be one of my favorite art institutions in the country. It's a former mattress factory that in the 70s turned into site-specific installations. So you took a building equipped or built out one of your projects there, which was just extraordinary. So let's talk a little bit about one of your newest initiatives, which you mentioned to us, which is in partnership with the History Museum, and it's a preservation of objects. So let's find out more about that.
Well, you know, you're very aware that the destruction of buildings, especially historic buildings, has long been an issue in the city of Buffalo. Thinking about first, how do we steward, safeguard buildings, historic buildings that are at risk. And, you know, that's my position is, you know, first, we're first of all, looking at opportunities to save buildings that are able to be saved, but also recognizing that sometimes, for whatever reason, that can't always happen. It can't happen. So, you know, what other things can be done? And so working with the City of Buffalo, Mayor's Office, and with the Buffalo History Museum, Executive Director Melissa Brown, formulating a plan that in the cases where there are buildings that are historic and that unfortunately cannot be saved, that will work to collect, to steward artifacts from those buildings. This is a long-term initiative. So right now our efforts are focused on, you know, identification, collection, you know, protection of the items, and then formulating a longer-term plan. But we're imagining that over the years, as project grows, that we can approach the presentation, the representation of artifacts from such sites in a creative way. So thinking about them not just as objects that are going to be behind glass boxes, but rather, you know, what ways might they be reassembled or represented in order to spark curiosity, in order to spark engagement, in order to inspire. So we'll be thinking through over the next year, you know, various ways of doing this and how we're going to be approaching that. But right now, you know, we're really looking, you know, in an excited way towards thinking about public memory in a new way, thinking about the importance of public memory. And, you know, I'm always just captivated by the things in the city that we don't see and the things that we do see. You know, and so often the building goes away and we, you know, there's no memory, there's no trace. So I like thinking about this current that comes above and below the surface, you know, and I want to ride with the current. You know, that's what I want to do. I want to move up and down with these memories and these pieces of things. And I think that this initiative will hopefully provide an interesting way for me to ride that and then to give back so that those memories can be breathed again.
I mean, my hope, unfortunately, is that the initiative doesn't get off the ground because we don't take down any more buildings in Buffalo.
Sure. Yeah.
But I guess if we need to, yes, let's absolutely preserve. And not only just the exterior, but elements of the interior as well. We often, you know, see, you know, vintage or historic interiors getting gutted in these fabulous buildings. And that has to be part of the movement as well. Let's save some of the interiors. So how are you funded? How is this amazing enterprise that you've built that has so many different components to it? How do you do what you do?
Well, like most big initiatives like this, it's a puzzle piece that's constantly rejiggered. So there's a substantial portion of revenues at Assembly House 150 coming from large foundation support. I'm very thankful for the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Foundation and what they've done for us over the years. And there's some aspects of their workforce training through the carpentry and skill building programs funded in part through New York State and through Erie County. So we're very thankful for that. And we have very many private individuals and small family foundations and corporate supporters who are interested and invested in helping us to grow and to establish this as an important site in the city. I mean, that's what we want to be. We want to be a hub. And so it's very important that we continue to grow those relationships with all demographics of people. And as you know, we were talking the other day, Fred, so that the commission stuff too. I mean, that's, you know, the revenue, it doesn't just come from the donations and the grant funded work, but also through opportunities to do commissioned work like we did at Northland, the Birchfield Penny Arts Center. So, you know, always looking for opportunities because we have a shop where we can pretty much manufacture everything in house. To extend out and do work that adds value to other places.
Well, it's really amazing, and I'm so grateful that you've embarked on this, and you know, in keeping with the theme of the podcast, you know, Buffalo Who Knew, what strikes you as, I mean, I think frankly that everything you're doing is could be the subject matter of this program, because, you know, frankly, not enough people know that you are doing this, not only in Buffalo, but beyond. I mean, I really firmly believe that this is a site that people from all over the country, when they're coming in to see Darwin Martin House and all the other architectural treasures in Buffalo, that they, or the AKG for art, that they should be coming to see Assembly House 150. But what is an aspect of this that you think people would not necessarily know about this?
Well, you know, so often people who come in, they remark to me that they've passed by the church so many times and they have always wondered what's going on inside. Or they've always thought, what's going on? And
not the least of which, you have a trailer out front with doll's heads peeking out the windows. I mean, I do love your humor and your sensibility. Yeah. That is attention getting for sure.
But I think that for me, part of the specialness is to nest these things, these special experiences, in the everyday, in such a way where they actually don't hit you over the head. You know, I want people to seek things out. I want people to look for the places of adventure. I want people to go into the world with a sense of curiosity and discovery. And so I find it endearing that there's no sign, and that, you know, we do have public tours, I should mention, that are available second Saturdays of the month. We don't do them in the dark days of the winter, but we'll get back to them in March, where we can sign up on the website to take a tour of the place.
And people should go see the room at the Birchfield Penny, and or the mural, you know, the sculpture at Northland, because they're just magnificent. So hopefully we see more of your public works around town and in other cities. It doesn't have to be relegated to Buffalo. And look forward to seeing this organization grow. And again, Dennis, thank you for taking on such an exciting, game-changing project for this city.
Thank you for your enthusiasm and support. It's great to be with you guys and to let people know about it.